Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to remember those who have transgressed against the great spirit of inclusion and must henceforth be forever cast into the abyss of dead names. In this moment of our remembrance, we prove with great grief and wailing the sincerity of our noble tolerance. What we once wrongly allowed in the ignorance of white privilege has become the cleansing rite of virtue signaling we use to prove our purity. Join with me now as we remember those we've lost, although this week it's all praise. First, we want to honor the fine work of promoting equity being done in California public schools. In the late 1990s, California, which had been enrolling only its highest achieving eighth graders in algebra, realized that the vast majority of minority students were taking ordinary math. So they formed a plan called Algebra for All in eighth grade to remedy the race gap. Unfortunately, it turned out that the unprepared minority students did very poorly and often had to retake the course, putting them even farther behind than they had been. In response, San Francisco pioneered the Algebra for None program, making it illegal to give anyone algebra in the eighth grade. Following the advice of St. Harrison Bergeron, they made everyone get the same math instruction regardless of past performance. Now, as it turns out, the result of this policy was essentially no change in outcomes like AP scores for white students, whose families largely chose expensive tutoring, summer courses, and private schools to make up for what the public schools weren't offering anymore. Meanwhile, black students fared no better than before on AP tests and actually saw many higher performing minority students end up behind compared to where they would have been under the old system of placing children in the classes based on individual merit. Thus, even though these various efforts have generally harmed black students, we applaud the courageous way California has acted to create equity in theory, even when they knew it was creating inequity in practice for those they were trying to help. As Frankenheimer's third dictum reminds us, we only learn how deep our commitment is to helping people when we find out how much our help has actually harmed them. So true. Whether algebra for all or algebra for none is not the point. The real thing is to make sure that we treat every unique and individual student as if they are exactly the same. Woe unto all who offend.
Woe unto all who offend.
Second, I want to encourage the Oscar Mayer Company for bravely engaging in a wonderful act of relanguaging this week as they have officially changed the name of the bizarrely misogynistic Wienermobile to something significantly less offensive, the Frankmobile. Dear Otherin, we recognize the courage required to abandon a widely known, widely, though wrongly, loved and highly recognizable brand like the Wienermobile for something completely unknown after 87 years of branding success. Anytime someone, especially a filthy, greedy corporation, is willing to change a name, we're all for it, just on the principle that changing words is our most holy sacrament. However, I do have two small notes of criticism. First, they did not change the name for the right reason. According to Oscar Mayer, this is entirely intended to emphasize to consumers that their famous product is technically an all-beef frank and not merely a jumble of random bits of extra meat. It really isn't a wiener after all. But why change names merely for the sake of advertising value when they could have bragged they were changing names in order to affirm the sacred cause of gender eradication? As we all know, the real popularity of this particular icon was always the double entendre of a sexual innuendo that made people snicker as they snacked. And if Oscar Mayer would have said they were desexualizing the hot dog, we would have given them three pink hat stickers for virtue signaling. Instead, they make it sound like it's just a business decision. Probably because they're afraid of a Bud Light-esque backlash if they gave the real motive. We certainly don't like to see a righteous renaming have to hide underneath the pretext of a mere business choice. But the second criticism we have is the actual name itself. Since we all see the misogyny behind the popularity of the Wienermobile moniker, continually parading its fully elongated self around in public like the giant nomadic phallus we all recognize it to be, we had hoped they might opt for a full rebrand to maybe an entirely different product line, perhaps the Bologna Buggy, or the Bacon Bringer, or the Lunchable Wagon. But we recognize they probably wanted to keep costs down and not have to buy an entirely new fleet of vehicles, so perhaps just a little more work on the name would have been good. Now, obviously some terms like the Wandering Footlong of Fun, or the Weenie Wheeler, or the Mystery Meat Machine would not have been much better than the Wienermobile from a sexism standpoint. But perhaps the hot dog cart, or the Frankfurter jalopy, or even the big roaming red sausage of mouth pleasure. Well, maybe not that one either now that I hear it out loud. In any case, for a company to discard such a powerful and offensive brand for whatever reason is cause for celebration. Good for you, noble maker of mystery meats. Now we can all wish we were an Oscar Mayer, Frank. woe unto all who offend.
Woe unto all who offend.
And finally, we want to honor the excellent work being done in Pensacola, Florida, by a local citizen who brought enlightenment to the city council when she explained that noise ordinances are fundamentally racist.
I want to shed light on a troubling aspect of our history, a history marked by the systemic targeting of black businesses through the insidious weapon of noise complaints.
Yes, that's right. As she explained, the kind of noise black people make is considered bad noise, but the kind of noise white people make is considered good noise, an obvious example of systemic oppression.
It's because the soundscape of our public spaces is designed and regulated to prioritize the comfort and preferences of the dominant culture.
And since being noisy is just the kind of thing black people do because of their culture, efforts to make them be quiet are just another version of Jim Crow laws that punish them for their blackness. After all, we all know the term white noise refers to that innocuous, even helpful sort of background sound that calms people so well they even purchase devices to generate it for them. In contrast, imagine the confusion if you told someone, "Yeah, I just bought a thing because I wanted to add some black noise to the room." See?
Quiet, subdued tones are promoted as the norm, while the vibrant sounds of cultural celebrations, religious rituals, or everyday conversations of non-dominant communities are often deemed disruptive or even threatening.
In other words, not only are black people incapable of being quiet, as she says, but asking them to be quiet is just another way of denying their blackness and forcing them to be more white. So instead of continuing to tell black Americans to sit still and be quiet like good little whites, learn to cherish the noise and the celebration. It's who they are. So when that black teenager rolls up next to you blasting his anthems of racial justice, remind yourself that he's not being a bad citizen, he's being a good African American. And when that BIPOC house down the street is having a party at 2 a.m., they're being bad neighbors, they're being the best of neighbors. And if only you weren't so white, you'd hear it that way. Thus, instead of laws that treat whites and blacks the same, what we should really have is a different law for each race. We should tell white people to be white and prohibit them being noisy, and we should tell black people to be black and prohibit them being quiet. Since loudness is such an inherently black behavior, why not make it mandatory? We certainly don't want to be guilty of encouraging them to be white, do we? And if this separate but equal noise ordinance concept seems like some form of, you know, racial segregation to you, well, perhaps you just aren't listening with the right color ears. So I say to blacks everywhere, we hear you. And even if it hurts our delicate white eardrums, we know that hearing you is good, because that's who you are. Woe unto all who offend.
Woe unto all who offend.
Before you depart, a few quick announcements. Tuesday night is a school board meeting, and we encourage you all to show up to protest the administration's continued indifference to our demand that they replace school buses with pedal trolleys in an effort to reduce the carbon footprint of our precious children and give them much-needed exercise. We need 4 people on the sign-making committee, 3 people to write chants, and at least 2 experienced tambouriners for the rhythm section. See Bronwyn in the back for sign-up sheets. As always, bras and footwear are optional. For refreshments this week, Sandra Whitestone has kindly brought us some lovely homemade kale brownies made entirely from wheat grown with human compost, ethically sourced Pacific seaweed, non-GMO carob powder, walnut milk, and of course, consensually donated cage-free emu eggs. Sheila and Guinevere, I believe, laid this week's offering. And now, with these cleansing rites performed, may we all go forth in loving tolerance and microaggress no more. Woe unto all who offend.
Woe unto all who offend.